Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I'm your host, Radu Palamariu, Managing Director of Elcot Global. Our mission is to connect the supply chain ecosystem in Asia and globally by bringing forward the most interesting leaders in the industry. And I'm very happy to have with us today Dr. Dirk Holbach, currently Corporate Senior Vice President and Chief Supply Chain Officer for Laundry and Home Care at Henkel Global Supply Chain. With more than 20 years of experience in supply chain operations, purchasing and sales, Dirk has held various roles on a local, regional and global level at Henkel. His special focus has been on supply chain strategy and organizational development, network optimization, continuous improvement and post-merger integrations. Obviously, as we all know, Henkel is a German-based global consumer goods, which is well known globally for its brands such as Persil, Loctite and Schwarzkopf, with close to 20 billion euros in revenue last year, and which has undergone continuous changes and upgrades and developments over the years, and its supply chain is one of the best in the world. So Dirk will be helping today to share a little bit of insights and case studies into what they've been doing. Dirk, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, hello, Radu. Thanks for inviting me. I'm really happy to be here and looking forward to your questions.
Super. I wanted to start with your transformation plan as an organization. You launched in 2017 a series of actions that you pretty much wanted to take from 2017 to 2020. You're already kind of done with a lot of it. So I wanted to engage you and ask you if you can tell us a little bit about that. How has that plan been? How has been that transformation journey so far? And a little bit of some of the results that you've already been seeing on the supply chain side.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for the question. I believe it's important to position the 2017 to 2020 plan in the context. So it's not the first multi-year plan we established. So we really started in 2005, 2008, 9 to 12, and then 13 to 16, with three prior periods focusing always on different aspects in our supply chain. So the very first start, really, if I may say, in 2005, it was more on getting the right leadership in the different key positions, then focusing on network, the classic kind of supply chain work you do. Then once that was pretty much settled, and then let's say driving efficiency in the network. And the key theme of the 17 to 2020 plan is definitely the digital transformation next to all, let's say, usual and common supply chain focus areas like cash, cost, and service, just to mention the three really classic ones. When it comes to the plan, as said, very much focused on digital. We are well underway, of course, like always in life, never fast and good enough. So that is a continuous challenge and a continuous task. Where I would say I'm especially proud of is really in the meantime, our, I would call it a toolbox and capability we have built in the area of digital, and also the global impact on the organization. Just to mention one example, we have started to build up our own analytics platform, cloud-based, less than 2 years ago. And in the meantime, we have 1,300 active users in our supply chain community. Looking at the total number of colleagues, we have in our team that is almost 20%. So if you, let's say, deduct blue collars who are not usually accessing directly those kind of tools, then that is quite a high reach. And also when we look at the reports being pulled out of that we call it internally Wellspring digital backbone, it's reaching in the meantime 17,000 single accesses per day by more than 300 different users average. So I think that is just one example of a, let's say, I would call the penetration figure of digital in our organization. So that is really, really going well. And maybe probably later in the podcast, I can give the one or the other more example going forward, what we are currently planning to do in that field. Mm.
Yes. And I wanted to touch upon sustainability, because the topic is one of the most Well, firstly, it's burning, I think, for all of us, not only whether we are in supply chain or whatever we are doing. But specifically, as practitioners in supply chain, as leaders in supply chain, there's a lot of things that can be done to achieve a sustainable supply chain, from reducing of plastic to packaging to sustainable way of transportation to, you know, a number of other measures. So I wanted to ask you, from Henkel's perspective, what are some of the measures that you have taken to ensure a more sustainable supply chain?
Yeah, also very excellent question. So I usually get in the morning kind of a press summary, and there's this morning, I just had a look at this. There were two FMCGs mentioned and what they do about social plastic and plastic reduction. So I think you are fully correct. It's very much on the agenda now, and it's not only about plastic. So let me start a bit what the company has been doing. So sustainability is somewhat part of our genetic code. 22 years ago, we published the first corporate sustainability report. And since 2005, we have been very much focusing on supply chain relevant KPIs like energy, water, waste, and safety. Driving them to completely different levels. And here, just to mention, since then, for instance, in laundry and home care, we reduced our specific energy consumption by more than 50%. So that means every product or ton of product being produced, we use, compared to almost 15 years ago, half of the energy. So I think that always has been our focus. First, better avoid. And then, of course, what we're also doing, then you try to source energy in a more sustainable way, avoiding any kind of greenwashing, so buying some certificates, but really doing something impactful and sustainable for the environment. So that is a bit about looking at the supply chain that we extended over the years also into the transportation, upstream, downstream, so freight to warehouse, freight to customer, as you just mentioned, looking at very consequently at different transportation modes. Of course, in the moment you optimize a network in terms of goods moved, inbound or outbound logistics, you always have a positive impact on the sustainability CO2 impact, as you, and that is a parameter we have been looking at very consequently the last years when we did such network optimization, as you reduce kilometers and with that also CO2 emissions. Then, of course, we look at the fleets of our providers in order to optimize that. In the meantime, also good tools are out there when it comes to track and trace. So you can really, track down these kilometers on a very, very precise, precise way. So that is a bit what we are doing, let's say, in the supply chain environment. But of course, sustainability for us as a business is going much, much further. Just want to elaborate on two points. One is obviously plastic. As an FMCG or a CPG company, that is, of course, a very, very obvious topic. And here we have also not started only today or yesterday working on that. Over the last years, when it comes to product design, packaging design, lightweighting, reducing plastic, and then also replacing via recycled plastics. We have some of our product lines already in fully recycled PET, for instance, using also social plastic from our partner Plastic Bank. So, and that is something, of course, what and which we are going to drive further ahead. But let's say the portfolio of measures is manifold. So starting from reduction and then properly using circular material, and then of course also making sure, and I think that is one good example, that the packaging is recyclable to 100%, so to be able to contribute again to the circular stream. And here, for instance, with one, let's say, a renowned institute, Fraunhofer Institute, we developed a tool for packaging design, which is, in the meantime, it's open, it's free, can be downloaded at a specific web page. It's being used by more than 600 other companies, and we are hoping to, in a collaborative way, and we are doing this, not only hoping, to continue to develop this tool together with others in order to really promote the idea to start at the source. Yeah, of course, avoiding plastic is the best way to reduce the impact on the environment. And the other big topic for us as a business is unit dose, that means having, let's say, the delivery of the laundry detergent in the machine in a specified quantity. So what we now see in the market as water-soluble capsules, for instance. And with that, we have seen a drastic compaction of products. So, and of course, the more compact the product is, the less room it needs, the less packaging again, and also the better the transportation. So just to give one example, 20 years ago, in Europe, when you had a normal wash load, you had to put 150 milliliters of liquid detergent. Now, at the moment, we are for liquid detergents at 50. So we came down from 150 to 50 milliliter dosage, of course, smaller bottles, less transportation, and. And when it comes to unit dose, at the moment, the market standard is 25 milliliter, and we are going even more compact. So I think that is another very important contribution of our industry to, first of all, again, avoid the usage of resources, and then, of course, make sure that whatever we use is either coming out of a circular stream or can be fully introduced into a circular stream.
And I wanted to ask you specifically, because I had this conversation and you mentioned plastic, right? Plastic is a big issue. It's probably one of the largest issues that we face as humanity. And I was talking to this contact of mine who also happens to work for a consumer goods company, much more on the food side. But and I was asking him, because one thing is plastic, recyclable plastic. But that basically assumes, and you know, I sit in Singapore, Southeast Asia, you know, you have South America, there's areas in the world where recycling is really not a big thing. Maybe in Europe, maybe in, you know, in US, there's areas where it's fairly developed, but in most places, even if the plastic is recyclable, people are not don't have this habit of recycling, or don't, you know, are not as prone to do it. So I was wanting to ask you, and this kind of popped into my mind, in terms of those types of, how do you call it, biodegradable types of packaging, which again doesn't necessarily fit, because you can't necessarily put detergent or soap or shampoo in it and for it to be able to maintain the quality of the product. But have you also looked into this type of biodegradable type of packages, or is it applicable to some of the products at Henkel or not so much?
Yeah, for sure we are looking at those, and I think you mentioned already one challenge, which is for our products, but same also for food, the packaging has one function, is a barrier function. It's not only, of course, that you carry product relevant information, data, and so on. But it's, of course, you want to make sure that the product is not being impacted by the environment or vice versa. So let's say, answer again is yes, of course. Pilots on biodegradable packaging being used for our products. The challenge is there. It's extremely expensive at the moment still, and availability. So, but that will come. So it will scale up. So the point is, at the moment, we are looking at a lot of alternatives, and that now makes it also so difficult for a supply chain to be able to anticipate what will come over the next 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 10 years, because some of the developments will impact our physical setup, our assets, quite significantly. So the compaction I mentioned, yeah, that is a completely different manufacturing technology, and here we're talking about hundreds of millions. Of capital when it comes to this conversion process, and the same, by the way, also when it comes, or similar, when it comes to the plastic discussion. Is it mechanically recycled material? Is it chemically recycled? Chemically is probably maybe the best way to do it, but it needs a couple of years until it's available at scale. And then, of course, the different plastics sources will also impact our manufacturing. Coming back to your initial point, yes, correct. And if you look at ocean plastic, the 10 rivers spoiling to more than 90% of our oceans are usually in emerging countries, whatever, like the Nile in Egypt. And as you rightfully say, there you would not yet see recycling systems set up in a way as you see it in other countries. Nevertheless, one of our approaches is we collaborate with this initiative I mentioned earlier, Plastic Bank. It's about social plastic, and David Katz is, he's the CEO of that initiative, is really doing. He's going to these geographies and combining the reintroduction of plastic into the value chain with a good cause, I would say. So that's, well, social plastic. So that means providing an incentive to people who can really benefit also in economic terms from collecting plastic and making sure that these resources are being reintroduced into the value chain, and really doing both things at once. And that, I think, is one way to start to build up the right systems and also incentives in those geographies to capture more and more material. So, and I think there are many other, and I just mentioned this one because we are participating, but there are many other ones who are equally well and important and supporting. So here really also as an industry, we have the obligation to foster and to support those kind of efforts in order to really create more efficiency in the system. As a company alone, of course, we are by far too small to organize something similar just on our own. But of course, we try to help, to support, and to drive those kind of initiatives together with these partners in order to attract more and more other players from the industry and outside the industry, so that to make this movement bigger and bigger. Mm.
And I didn't know about you mentioned before the discovery that you've shared with, and 600 other organizations are using on the packaging side. And I think this kind of collaboration is highly needed and highly useful. And there's no one, you know, one company that can do it, but as coming together, we can. And it's the same. And I know that you're a user of Tesla. I don't know if it makes sense from an economic and corporate perspective necessarily, but he's trying to push the whole industry forward, right? So I guess...
Exactly. It's definitely a disruptor. And I usually say on the one hand side, walk the talk, so start with yourself, knowing that you alone will not make the difference on a global scale. But again, setting the right example is good. Yeah, that is an important starting point. And again, let's say myself, but also the company in the position which we are, people are watching and following and looking at us, what we are doing. They are also challenging us and expecting us to move. So from that point of view, start with yourself, do good things, and then share your experiences, or like this tool, which I mentioned, and make it available to others so that they can contribute, make it even stronger and better, increase the impact on the total system by doing so.
In terms of all this pace of change and new things coming up, new types of initiatives, Industry 4.0, you have all sorts of new developments across supply chain. And we had a very, very good question that came from one of our listeners in terms of how do you even keep up to date with all this new stuff coming up? And the question was twofold. One, how do you keep up with it, right? And in terms of making sure that you kind of keep abreast of all the changes, new developments, keep learning. And secondly, which is even more important sometimes, is how do you introduce these new developments that make sense to the business in the business? Do you have a process? Do you start regionally, locally, then test it globally? How do you do that? So one, how do you learn and get abreast of all these new things? And two, how do you then implement it within Henkel?
Yeah, two excellent questions. I think I focus now more on the digital piece. I think that was also the context of that question.
Yes.
Both are connected. Yeah. So how is our approach when it comes to digitalization of the supply chain? I think it's a mix between a top-down, bottom-up approach. So let me try to explain it in a quick way. Three and a half years back, and let's say the time before, we did a couple of things in digital, but three and a half years back, we looked at ourselves, took a step back and said, okay, exactly facing the challenge, hey, if we continue like that, we will either be missing important things, and by the way, you always will miss something which is relevant, it's life, or and at the end of the day, we will lose focus and invest maybe too many resources in the wrong thing. So what we did was we gave ourselves a frame where we said, okay, for us as an FMCG supply chain in our specific situation, what are the most promising, and we called it technology areas, where we believe digitalization, Industry 4.0 is currently producing applications which are relevant for us. So, and then we said that is sensorics, that is robotics, analytics, visualization and also end-to-end data integration. That was what we called it at that time. So that was setting the framework. So what we since then have been doing, whatever kind of application, use case, however you want to call it, we are looking at, we always make sure that this fits to the frame. And the frame is also a living frame, so we adjust the borders from time to time in order to make sure that we catch up with the most recent developments. So that is, I would say, the top-down approach. So bottom-up means we have also since then 2.5 years in our organization, in each factory, someone who is, we call them SPOCs, or single point of contacts, when it comes to I40 digital. And these guys have regular calls, communication, internal Yammer groups. It's a bit like Facebook, I would say, where they exchange experiences, ideas, and thoughts. So that means we are doing this scouting process in the organization all over the globe. Whoever has something where he or she believes it's great, not only for me, but also for the rest of the business, well, then is that the right forum to share and to explore? And of course, I have also a small but a dedicated team in supply chain, around about 10 colleagues in the meantime, based in Amsterdam, based in Spain, in the US, in Dubai, and also in Singapore. Of course, that is part of this central digital team doing a scouting within these technology areas also on a continuous basis. So that is a bit to describe the process. How do we make sure that we don't lose focus? On the other hand side, reduce the risk to miss something really relevant. And of course, engage and involve the organization. So that is the piece of scouting. How do we deploy? That is, I would say, a pretty pragmatic approach. In a moment, we find an application, a use case fitting into that framework. We say, okay, looks interesting, sounds good, which normally the evaluation is done by this 10 plus minus team. They are organized in three different groups on a very fast way because we are FMCG, so we are going usually for the 80% plus solution. So, And then we try it out. Either, for instance, a pilot is already running at a site. I said, hey, we tried this out. Is it good for us? Then we have already a reference. If not, usually within this group of SPOC, so we're talking about 40 colleagues plus minus in this, let's say, virtual network. We look together with them, okay, where is probably the best site to try it out? Either we go directly for two or three sites, or we do one site, then two, three, and then full scale-up approach. And that is usually happening, I would say, the pilot, depending a bit, of course, on the technology, in a site or two or three over a period of 3 to 6 months. Or sometimes it's faster, sometimes it takes longer, depending whether some physical assets are also involved in the pilot. And then we know it's good or not, do some fine-tuning and decide on a further rollout. And then usually also we are in the position to build a business case for a further rollout, which then the target is always globally, if something is really good, I want to have it rolled out within 12 to 18 months everywhere in the world where it makes sense. Yeah. So that is, let's say, our would call it deployment. So scouting and deployment approach.
Kind of moving slightly to a topic of mergers, acquisitions, and obviously Henkel over time has bought a number of companies. And from a supply chain integration perspective, that can be usually actually is quite challenging and tricky. And you also need to kind of have a unique and diverse type of approach depending on the type of company, the type of product that you're integrating. Do you have a certain formula or do you have certain steps that you would typically follow from your position as a head of supply chain when it is about integrating or a new product line or a new brand into the company, on how you would do it in a least or in the most effective way?
Yeah, when it comes to M&A, of course, as you rightfully say, that each acquisition is different. Yeah, so this is like depending on the geographic scope, the assets, do we speak about brands or do we speak also about physical assets and people, obviously. So from that point of view, very different. What we do in general is we are really involved as a supply chain team from the very beginning, the start of the conversation in the acquisition process. And also here I established 5-6 years ago a small team, 3-4 people, it depends a bit on the activities on the M&A and divestment side. Let's say the size is fluctuating, but we are very, very much involved right away from the beginning. And then, of course, during the diligence, depending on the design of the deal, also in the negotiation and the contracting. So from that point of view, we know very early already how we want to and we need to approach then an eventual integration afterwards. And again, that is very much depending on the type of the type of the deal. Preparation is also then steered globally from the global team until we really close the deal. So the signing, and then the original colleagues are usually then already on board, take over in the execution. And here really again it depends on the size and on the type of acquisition. We have more or less involvement from my global team, or some cases even myself, during the integration phase. What are usually there the big challenges from a supply chain side is obviously it can be footprint, so that we have really some overlaps in the geographies where we buy, and then definitely on the people side, when it comes to corporate cultures, of course, can be very different, especially when we as a larger corporation, for instance, buy smaller family-owned business. That is usually one of the big attention points. And how do we address it? Usually we then, of course, very quickly exchange people in the one and also in the other direction, training and so forth. And another point was also mentioned in the questions. Of course, system integration is also a very, very, very important topic. So we try to do that as fast as possible. And then, of course, you have to be sure that when it comes to master data, you clean up before you integrate. Otherwise, you pay the price afterwards. So I would say that is in a nutshell. The process and the key points we're looking at. So starting very early, preparing then the individual approach to a PMI, and then of course heavy support, people exchange afterwards. And again, sometimes you can say you are done after half a year, 9 months, 12 months, and some other integration processes take much longer, as they just bigger in scale. And of more people involved. And again, then this kind of change management transformation process, of course, is taking more time.
On the topic of e-commerce, as well as fulfilling directly to consumer, which is more and more of a trend. I mean, it's no longer a trend. It's actually the reality. I think the e-commerce numbers are just blowing up year on year on year. And it's becoming a channel basically across industries. And I was talking to, we had another podcast, very interesting, on the healthcare side, with Alessandro De Luca. I think you might know him from Merck. And he was saying that also from Merck, there's a number of initiatives they're taking on the e-commerce side. How does Henkel approach that? You obviously have e-commerce, you have other channels. Are there certain challenges that you're faced with, short-term, mid-term, long-term? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that is also, it's a big question. So you could take 2 hours minimum. No, even longer to talk about it. Let me try to be
I'm not asking you easy questions, yes.
No, it's not the point. No, it's a very relevant question. And I wouldn't say it makes my night sleepless. I'm sleeping usually very well, but we are continuously looking at this and changing and adjusting our system. So, of course, for a large-scale, volume-driven supply chain like the lawn and home care business, that is specifically a challenge, because we are thinking in full pallets, full trucks, and not parcels, just to make that first statement. the answer is, of course, yes, we are continuously looking at this and developing our capabilities. I think we see here a couple of developments. One is our, let's say, in the more mature markets, our modern trade partners, of course, they are adjusting their systems too, like Walmart investing heavily into e-commerce. So that is one challenge to be able to cater for that. And it's not only about the supply chain as such, the physical process, but also very much about the products. So you need to have products which are, we call internally, e-commerce ready. So be as compact as possible. I mentioned that before. This, of course, is already an important qualifier. Then the packaging, a bit in contradiction to our earlier discussion, also able to be shipped over longer distances, treated in many cases not very well. So that means lightweighting is good for the environment, but not necessarily good for e-commerce purposes. So here we have already, let's say, contradicting requirements. But what I want to say is, of course, also the product design, your product offering needs to be specific to the e-commerce environment, which again, indirectly or directly is hitting us because you have tendentially more product complexity in your portfolio. So from that point of view, that is definitely very high on our agenda. When it comes to direct to consumer, direct to customer, also here as a company and also as in a business, we are doing the first important moves. So our beauty care colleagues just bought a fully hyper-personalizing business with eSalon. So at the end of the day, you get there, your hair treatment really configured to your personal needs, produced and shipped directly. So that is a very promising business. We announced a few weeks ago our first investment also in a D2C business with Truman's in North America in form of venture capital. So the specific challenge for our category is our products usually are high rotation articles in stationary trade, but also relatively low value density, I would say. So the dollar or the euro per kg or per pound is comparatively low, for instance, to an OTC product from Merck or even a beauty care product that is factor 5 to 7 more expensive. So hence, also more efficient when it comes to shipping. It's in individual parcels. So that is definitely a challenge our products have. So, but we see in several markets that the e-commerce share and relevance of our product category is rapidly accelerating. So from that point of view, definitely a high attention point. Again, looking at the consequences for our supply chain, different products, different ways of shipping to the consumer. And of course, when you have DTC business, direct to consumer, we also get much more insights on the consumer, which is another reason to do it, because you have no classic trade anymore in between, and can learn much more and engage also with the consumer in a completely different way. And one more element I just want to mention is also we have a couple of participations in the meantime in service companies, so startups providing laundry services, so not really the chemistry, but let's say somehow implicitly the chemistry, the service around laundry in the Netherlands, in Middle East, in other European countries, where we are also building up that competence and learning, which again over time will have implications also on our supply chain setup. Nevertheless, and that is also what I always tell my business peers and my colleagues is, as said at the beginning, our business, Lauren Home Care, is driven by large-scale volumes in the supply chain, and that also will not change over the next 3 or 5 years. Yeah, we will see an increase of all these other elements I just mentioned, but still, at the moment and for a foreseeable future, our bread and butter business is are these large scale volumes. And I think the challenge we have is that we have this, other business opportunities increasing in terms of share and importance over the next years, and we need to be able to serve with our system these multiple different needs in a smart way. So, and that is a lot about segmentation and also redesigning on a continuous basis the way how we deliver products and services to our end consumers and customers. Mm.
And it's almost like bringing the discussion full circle to where we started on your transformation journey. Transitioning a little bit to the softer side, to the people side, which ultimately are behind any organization, wanted to touch upon the a topic that, again, is highly relevant and talked about, and probably sustainability is something you can read every day. Diversity is another thing you can read every day, and for good reasons. So I wanted to ask you, how do you drive gender diversity within Henkel operations, and specifically Henkel supply chain? We probably never get enough women in supply chain. Are there specific things that you do around that aspect?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I can only confirm your statement. That is a journey that never stops. So starting probably with the company, of course, gender is one aspect of diversity. We usually look at also at others like nationality, personal background, and so forth. As a company, we comparing us with others which are in the DAX, so the German Dow Jones, I would say, equivalent. We are ranking quite high, which again doesn't mean that we will ever stop. So we can always do more. But just to give you a couple of numbers, so in the company we have employees coming from more than 120 nationalities. So, and 85% of them anyway are working outside of Germany. So that means we are, as you said at the beginning, a German-based company, but not at all, with a very high share of business still in Germany. And we have a share of 35% female, coming to the gender point in management position. Is that enough? I say no. And what now, coming to your point, what are we doing in the supply chain area? So here, let me share with you some numbers. So 7-8 years back, we had in the management position, so the comparable number here I just mentioned on company level, a share of female, which was around 12.5-13%. Yeah, that was 2011, 2012. And since then, we really actively not only look at these numbers in my leadership team, but also we drive change and improvement. And within the last 6-7 years, we were able to more than double that number. So we are around about at a 25% share at the moment. Given our footprint and also, let's say, the geographies we are in, I would say that is not bad, but is it enough? As I said before, no. So we have put quite a high emphasis on supporting female colleagues' development in our organization. As I said, in the leadership team, looking regularly at these numbers, we have a specific cohort of top talent females. We are, promoting in an accelerated way in the organization. However, always, and here I'm completely with our former CEO, who said we promote and hire for performance. So it's good that we have, and we force ourselves always to look at also female candidates when it comes to vacancies of positions. But at the end of the day, the candidate with the best potential and performance makes the race. So we do not make any compromise there. And I think that is also an important point, that we just don't want to look nice in our statistics and numbers. And for that, we are doing unreasonable things. So it's very much about creating the opportunity and consistently looking at development of diversity in the organization. And then, of course, at the end of the day, the best one will make it. Just to give one more example, so I have a relatively small team here in the headquarters, 35, 36 colleagues. We have 22 nationalities in that team. So just also underlines, that we are walking the talk. And personally, out of my family circumstances, I'm a great believer in diversity. So part of my family has Mexican passports. So obviously I have a German passport. So my kids have both. So from that point of view, as I said in a different context earlier, walk the talk, and then try to make it big. So that is also how we are dealing with this topic in the supply chain in my organization. And on a personal, one last comment is why I am a great believer in diversity. When it comes to, and I had in another context last week an interesting discussion about the difference between robustness and resilience. When it comes to robustness, of course, of a supply chain, that is for me always, how do you anticipate to make a system more robust against foreseeable external impacts, which is good. Their diversity helps, is one of the important elements. But when we look at the external environment specifically, the amplitude and the frequency of unplanned events has become or is becoming and getting more and more prominent. And then we talk about resilience for me, from my point of view. And for me, one of the really important supporting factors of a resilient system is definitely diversity in the team. So as you cannot... let's say when we talk about resilience, cannot plan each and every event or topic happening, impacting your supply chain. From a people point of view, for me, it's very important to make sure that you have a diverse set of capabilities, be it gender, be it nationality, in your team in order to have a higher likelihood to tackle an unplanned challenge or a situation with a higher success rate. So that is also a personal experience I made over the last years, and that's one of the reasons why I'm a great believer in complementary capabilities equaling a diverse team.
Mm. And I wanted to ask you on a personal note, because you have a very interesting background. You have a master's in engineering, you have a PhD, you have completed 4 Harvard Business School courses, you have done 2 INSEAD courses and one from IESE and one from HEC Paris Executive seminars. Can you tell us a little bit about the value of continuous education, as well as, let me ask you, what would be your next course be?
Yeah, very good. So you see that also here I'm applying a principle of diversity, not only going to one business school, doing different things. Now, de facto, when it comes to my really educational background, I personally always had an interest in technology. On the other side, also in the bigger picture, that was probably the reason why I was diversifying at that stage my education. The PhD was in information science, so 2002, probably a bit ahead of time. If I look now what is happening in Industry 4.0, but okay, again, interest driven, and also that was a personal challenge. When it comes to the business schools, I think I was obviously in the lucky position that the company, first of all, thought it is good to invest into myself and also had the money to do so. So I'm very, very thankful for that aspect. And why I was choosing different schools, again, you never find everything everywhere. And I think it's clear that these schools you mentioned, be it Harvard, INSEAD, Jesse, and so on, of course, amongst the top ones in the world. So that means the aspiration was there. If I take a week off, which again has become more and more difficult also in over the last years to really step out of the business, then it should be worthwhile doing. And I can confirm that each of these courses were all really, really great and adding additional value. And I think the charming thing is you really step, and that I think you need to be consequent also a few days out of your running business, and then you dedicate yourself to a specific topic. At the beginning, it was more geared towards negotiation skills when I was in purchasing still at that time. Later on, more strategic points on how to develop maybe a different business model, how to drive a better service in your value chain. So I think it's really important from time to time to do that. And if I look at the dates, the last one I did, I think I'm now due very soon for another one. because let's say to keep that good tradition up and coming to your point, what would be the ones I would choose for? Naya, I would actually like to or would invest time into digital transformation to learn also more about how other companies are doing this. And I think the charming thing is of these business schools usually have quite some case studies around sustainability. So the topic we also mentioned. When it comes to a more a holistic view on business strategy, of course, to learn and to understand how, let's say, even if not yet too applicable for our industry, but how other industries have been disrupted by new technologies, by changing consumer and customer behavior. So to really try to learn, let's say, to anticipate these kind of disruptions. And you mentioned Tesla somewhere earlier. I think this is a good example of how an entire industry by just one individual is being disrupted at the moment. So maybe this company will, it's a bit like Atari or Commodore maybe in the 90s, maybe that will not exist anymore in a few years or not in the way as it is today, but it will always be known as the ones who have disrupted an entire global industry producing 120 million cars a year and some big players in. So coming back to the courses, yeah, that would be my topics of choice in order to take a few days off and start thinking about the bigger picture.
Mm. I have two more questions for you, and the next one is very important in the context of the world that we live in, which is constantly in change mode, and where innovation and coming up with new ways and creative ways of doing things is forever more important. And at the same time, there's the natural human instinct of not wanting to fail and not wanting to make mistakes. So I wanted to ask you from a cultural perspective almost, if there's ways that you have experienced and that you have measures that you've taken with your teams and maybe even within the greater context of Henkel, to get employees and get your teams to be very comfortable with failing and also to encourage them to fail, but in order to achieve, innovation, new creative ways of doing things and so on, because, failing is just absolutely necessary part of the process to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is also, to a certain degree, a contradiction in running such a large-scale supply chain. I think what we try to do is you need to differentiate. Yeah. So if you have a big footprint project where you do things which you have done already 15 times, it's really about excellence in execution, perfect preparation, thinking about contingencies, scenarios, what can go wrong, and really deliver on time, in budget, everything as planned. So there is, I would say, little to no tolerance for failure, because again, this is something which the organization has been doing for years and is able to deliver also to the point. And also, we set up usually these things, be it investment projects or footprint projects, in a way that we have a systematic process also to at least trying to anticipate whatever can go wrong to mitigate as early as possible to make it happen. That again does not always work, but in 99% of the cases. So that is one thing. I think that is, I would say, standard and what the people have in mind. I think also what people usually think about when it comes to doing new things or implementing projects. So I think the other point is when it comes to innovation and new technology in the supply chain, I build on what I said earlier. We have this piloting process, scale-up process involving our sites with the digital SPOX. I think here we provide deliberately a room to experiment. And also, it's very clear at the beginning, if we say we go into a pilot with a specific technology at the moment, we are testing with our TCIF colleagues a lot around 3D printing. It's obvious and it's clear that we do this in order to find out whether things work or not, and to continuously also optimize them in short cycles. So, but then again, the briefing is a different one, and also the setup is a different one. I think that is the way how we try to distinguish these two buckets of things we are doing. So one is, I would say, the day-to-day, the normal supply chain work here, of course, ultimate precision and excellence in execution is absolutely required. And that is also key. And the other thing is when we talk about piloting, and really these topics are then declared as pilots, new approaches, new technologies, of course, you usually don't invest hundreds of thousands, maybe 10, 20, 30,000. And okay, you need to try out in order to find out whether it works or not. And then also the speed of execution and preparation is a completely different one. Then really the focus is on speed and not, of course, on excellence in execution. Once we then decide that we want to leverage such a technology on a global scale, then of course this moves more towards the other extreme I mentioned. Then you really you have a proper business case, a plan behind, proper governance in order to roll it out and so forth. But let's say the experimenting is going on in the first phase. And by the way, just to add one more example, in this global analytics platform, I think that was also one of the questions. I have built up in my team own resources who can program this these kind of things. Of course, we have a corporate IT, but we agreed with them. Here we have a kind of a sandbox environment. We can try out ourselves in very short cycle loops. So here, just to give an example, if whatever, I have a discussion with one of them, we develop a new report or something we want to look at, then in some cases 24 hours later, the stuff is there. So, and then we try it out, and if it works, it's good. We fine tune and further develop. So, and for me, it's very much about setting the agenda and the requirements and the expectations right in either one or the other, let's say, cases or environments. Mm. And then again, it doesn't. I don't say now it works perfectly, but yeah, it's a process. But we also didn't start this yesterday. We are. Let's say the birth of our digital backbone is 2012 or was 2012. So we are already a few years in that mode. And let's say people are able to distinguish very well in which of these modes we are, either experiment pilot or let's say the standard supply chain related project work where let's say excellence in execution is a must.
Final question, and very important for the listeners that are hoping or dreaming or learning one day to become a supply chain chief supply chain officer. If you had one piece of advice that you would give to all this maybe younger executives aspiring to become CSCOs one day, what would it be?
I would say be curious, try out, and also looking at my. In all humbleness, my development also, I had a couple of career positions where, let's say, the job was not really well defined when I took it over. So you need to take some risk, and also to say it positively, also the opportunity to shape your own area of responsibility in a way how you want to do it. So that would be, in a nutshell, my advice. Looking at our company, also the big advantage I would say in our company is that, of course, we look at career development of individuals, but also we don't overdo the process. So you will not find in Henkel a career plan for the next 10 years for yourself, and someone is coming to you and telling you this is what we plan to do with you. We are looking normally 2, 3, 4 years ahead, which is good. It's a very interactive process, and the company offers the opportunity that when the individual takes the opportunity to shape her or his own career, then there is plenty of room to do this. So that is my personal experience. So don't be shy. What I usually tell my guys is that, okay, in your talks with your supervisor, your annual, biannual performance potential reviews, voice also what you want to do, what your ideas are, what your plans are. Don't do it every second day. That can also go onto the nerves of your supervisor, but do it regularly. Do it regularly. If the organization doesn't know what you want, how would we be able to accommodate your thoughts? So I think that is an interactive process. Be curious, take some risk, try to shape and also shape your career and your development. And sometimes you have to do also things where you don't yet know how it will end. Invest probably a bit more energy in order to make it happen. But that has proven to be a good approach for me, at least. Again, I cannot have an ultimate recipe here, but just sharing my humble experience.
Yeah. Well, Dirk, thank you very much. Appreciate all the good sharings, the good case studies and examples, and very practical case studies from your experience, from Henkel's experience, extremely valuable, and I'm sure our listeners will greatly enjoy the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks also from my side for the great opportunity to share some of our experience here in that forum.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.